Hello and welcome to the Analytic Show, the podcast of business through the lines of data science. But together, we'll dive into learning and sharing where various industries are heading and how data and analytics is at the heart of shaping business growth and productivity. Let's spark different ways of thinking about data and analytics that is relevant to you and prepare your business for future disruption. I'm your host, Jason Tan. I'm delighted you could make it on this journey with us. Hey guys, to continue to get support tips, techniques, and tools, and learn from the expert, hit that subscribe button wherever you are so we can keep in touch and continue our lifelong learning together.
Hey Matt, welcome to the Analytic Show podcast. So excited to have you back, but this time the role has been reversed. I will be interviewing you. How are you today?
Great, thanks for having me.
Now, I have done my research. I know that you have won a number of awards for your work. I think that's one of them I got here is Ingram 40 Under 40 and also Tech Week 100. Do you still remember about those two awards? And can you tell me a bit more about those awards?
I do. You know, I don't remember a lot about those awards, except Ingram's wants to sell you a bunch of crap and wants you to sponsor their magazine, which is why they do their awards. But my favorite awards is the Inc. 500, the Inc. 5000 awards are actually my favorite. And I've had last year, I think it was, I had three or four companies all in the Inc. 5000 that I either had invested in, started, or was working at, which was kind of cool. So yeah, that's one of my favorites is actually the Inc. 500, Inc. 5000.
Why were they your favorite? Is it because it's a lot more difficult, a lot more merit goes on?
I just think it's cool to be recognized as, you know, one of the top 500 fastest growing companies, you know, in the United States. And so the first three companies I started all made the list at one point in time. So I just think it's a pretty cool award.
Like MVP, three in a row. I love it.
I love it too.
Tell me about your current role as a co-founder of FullScale and tell us a bit about FullScale as well.
Yeah, so we started FullScale about 5 years ago to do software development from the Philippines to help other people. I actually started to help myself. I had my own SaaS company startup at that time and needed to hire developers, but there was just no way I was going to be able to afford to hire. At that time, I would have had like 15 or 20 developers in the Kansas City area, and there was no way I could afford that. So I needed to hire some developers in either South America or Eastern Europe or Philippines or whatever. And a friend of mine convinced me to hire some in the Philippines, and it ended up being an accidental business. It worked well for me, and a bunch of people I knew wanted to get in on it. And today we have 300 employees, and you know, it was a company that was in Inc. 500 as well in the past. And so, yeah, it just turned into an accidental business that now has 300 employees.
Wow, 300 employees. And from my experience, I found that the Americans tend to prefer hiring in South America, whereas here in Australia, New Zealand, and other part of Asia would probably hire the Philippines. So why Philippine instead of the South American? I mean, that is, I mean, as a novel from what I observed.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Well, I think it's important for everybody listening that doesn't realize this. 90% of software developers are not in the United States. So if you're in the United States and you work in IT, you think all the IT people are in the United States. You're dead wrong. 90% of them are outside the United States. And there's talent everywhere. That's the point. There's literally talent everywhere. Latin America has become real popular over the last 5 to 10 years. And I think there's more and more talent that is developing in all these different countries. One of the challenges with them, though, is take like Costa Rica or something as an example. Yeah, there are great software developers in Costa Rica. But Costa Rica is also a tiny country. There's only 5 million people or something that live there. So the amount of software developers in Costa Rica is super, super tiny. Like there's just not a big talent pool in a lot of these markets. You know, we specifically like the Philippines because the cost is even lower. The cost is lower than Latin America. And English fluency is extremely high. That is one of the absolute best things about the Philippines. Most people don't realize that Philippines is the third largest English speaking country in the world. Something like 70-80% of the population speaks English, except for my mother-in-law, who does not. Everybody else does.
That makes sense. What about the hours, though? In terms of the time zone, I think a lot of the Americans prefer the Latin America because the overlapping of the time zone is a lot easier to manage, whereas Philippines is completely the other way around. And I totally feel that because when I am supporting our customer in the state, either I have to wake up super early or I have to stay up in the late until 1 o'clock in the morning, and that's not fun.
Well, so our employees do that. They shift their schedule. Most of them work until about midnight at their local time, which overlaps to 11 a.m. noon or so U.S. time, you know, depending on where you're at and what time zone U.S. But and it's more common in the Philippines for a lot of people to work U.S. hours. There's literally millions of people there that work in call centers and doing data entry and virtual assistants, all these kinds of work. So they actually have quite a kind of second shift culture. That, you know, 5 p.m. happy hour there is 5 a.m. in a lot of places. So it's pretty common. And that's one of the things we're really lucky about our employees and the workforce there is they're more willing to do that. That's one of the big negatives I've always heard about, like India and some other countries, is the people just absolutely refuse to like work different hours. And, you know, if you're in the U.S., you're trying to work with developers in India, it can be a real challenge for the same issues. They tend to not want to shift their hours at all. And, you know, our company, that's our kind of a requirement. If you want to work for us, you're going to have to work a shifted schedule and have a little more flexibility. But we pay very well. They're extremely high paying, you know, jobs compared to other local jobs. So, you know, we have a good success hiring, really talented people. So.
Good stuff. And, given that the AI, with generative AI and also what the GitHub is doing with the Copilot, are you guys experiencing and, trying out the coding Copilot, with your 300 strong technical engineer?
Yeah. So our team has created a bunch of training videos that they've circulated around, and it's definitely an ongoing thing of teaching people to use ChatGPT and Copilot and all these different things. We have some clients that we're doing work for that are using ChatGPT and stuff too. Like there's a company called Insight Voice, for example. We're helping them build their software, and it's actually really neat. It's designed to record a video like once a day, like you record a 60-second video. And then it runs it through ChatGPT, and it summarizes your video and creates like a blog post and LinkedIn posts and stuff like that, you know, from a video. And there's just all these great uses of generative AI, people doing interesting things. And, you know, we have several clients that are doing interesting things with AI. And it's a fun time to be in IT and be able to work around the AI stuff, both as a user of it, but then also, you know, helping other people build stuff.
I can imagine. And that seems like the building the AI application. How about yourself? Are you trialing out the any of these generative AI application within your company, especially for the engineer to help them to code faster, to help them as a coding buddy? What sort of thing you guys are trying in that area?
Yeah, it's, as I mentioned, it's mostly the training, right? We've done several different training videos, and we're trying to train the staff on using it. And, you know, sometimes it's hard to teach old dogs new tricks. And some people, I don't think they know what to ask it. You know, just like if you go back 20 years ago, people didn't know what to ask Google. Like, you didn't know that you could ask Google, like, what is the weather next Tuesday? And, you know, Australia, and it'll tell you that. Like, there's a million things you can ask Google to do too that most people don't realize. And for those of us that have grown up with Google, we've gotten used to like all the weird things that we can ask it. And I think my oldest son is 14, and, you know, now he's going to grow up in an era of ChatGPT, right? So they'll just get used to being able to ask it all the weird, crazy things that they learn over many years, and they'll be much more accustomed to it, right? Just like we're much more accustomed to asking, you know, knowing how to use Google, knowing how to use a search engine is a skill. People don't have the skill of knowing, like, what would I ask ChatGPT to do? Like, they're just, why would I ask it that? Like, they don't think about it. But there's so many great use cases as software developers, like even just like data hygiene and data cleanup, like take this SQL, you know, you can put like a database query in there and be like, what's wrong with this database query? Or format this database query for me. Like, there's like weird little things like that you can ask it to do, and people just don't even think about it. And so that's our opportunity as a company, right? Is just trying to teach everybody, like, oh, you have this tool available to you. There's 1,000 things it can do, and just trying to use it for everything. You never know what it'll do for you. So
are you worried that as a result of that, your business might be impacted?
No, it just makes us more productive. And if anything, we have more work to do because, you know, somebody like Insight Voice, I mentioned before, like, they only exist because ChatGPT exists, right? And so now we need more software developers to build software that uses AI. So if anything, I think it creates more jobs and more work to be done.
And how are you conveying that sort of messages back to your team, especially who are concerned that their job might be replaced by AI? I think that's probably one of the questions that I get the most, that's one of the questions that raised most of the time, that the front line, the engineer that would are worrying about the AI.
I mean, I don't see any way that it's going to replace software developers right now. I mean, it definitely hasn't impacted our company in that way. If anything, we have more work to do.
Maybe I reframe that question in. I agree with you. I don't think it will replace the front line. It will replace, but I'll rephrase that question as into how do you convey that message to the team?
To the team, yeah. I think by them just using it every day or understanding it, they understand, like, oh, this is kind of cute and it can help me, you know, fix my database query or whatever. But it doesn't like replace their job. Like they. You know, the other 7.5 hours a day that they weren't using it, you know, they're just doing their normal job. So it's just a tool. And I think anybody that uses it understands that it's just a tool. There's, you know, certain people in the media or on LinkedIn or whatever that want to hype up like some crazy, crazy stuff. But it's just a tool, man. And if anything, these things come around and we get more jobs or more different things to do. And there's all sorts of companies that have started that, building tools around AI and large language models. And you know, I read about startups like every week. Like there's some new startup that got a bunch of funding for a vector database because they need a vector database for large language models or whatever. And there's all sorts of like new technology and all sorts of stuff being created. So if anything, it's just creating more jobs, if you ask me.
I so agree. So while we are still talking about your team, do you use any data AI to help improve the team performance and the engineer performance? What do you do in that area?
So measuring the performance of software developers is really hard. You know, there's different kinds of tools that exist out there that look at like the source code repo and, you know, how many code commits do they do and the age of their pull request and how many tickets did they do and how many like new lines of code did they create versus modifying existing lines of code. Like people try to create like data and tools around all of that, but none of it works super good. I mean, it's, you know, the only real way to tell if a software developer is any good at their job is to work with them every day, tell, you know, give them assignments, give them work to do. And you just know, like, are they, you know, really confused? Are they getting stuff done very quickly? Are they getting nothing done? Like, that's really the only way to know. Like, the data doesn't really help, in my opinion. I think it helps confirm maybe your gut feeling. It's like, oh, my gut feeling is this person's not getting a lot accomplished. And then you can look at that tool and it says, yeah, they don't check in a lot of code or whatever. You're like, okay, well, I already kind of knew that, but this just kind of confirms it. But it's really difficult. I mean, especially like us, we have 300 developers. across 300 developers, there's no like generic way to say how good of a job are they doing with just based on data. Like it just doesn't work because they all do different things. It could be totally normal for one of them to be like, I write 3 lines of code a day and that's normal. And somebody else writes 100 lines of code a day and that's normal depending on their job and what they're doing and all the different stuff. It's just, it's not a universal thing.
I can imagine. So with 300, are they working in the office or are they 100% remote?
You know, before COVID, we had 2 floors and a high-rise building in the Philippines that everybody worked in, and we didn't really like people working remote, and we always wanted people in the office. And COVID changed all of it. Like a lot of people, we went remote, and now we have gotten rid of that office, and it is gone. So we are remote forever. Ended up being, you know, a huge advantage to us, you know, not only in, you know, saving some money on our rent, but also being able to hire more nationally. So now we're hiring all over the entire country of the Philippines, which most people don't realize is 7,600 islands. So now we've got employees like literally on all sorts of different islands and all, you know, all over the place, where before they were all in one city. So now we're able to tap in and hire people everywhere. And like a lot of, just like in the United States, people that were living in big expensive cities kind of left and went out of those towns to the places where there were lower cost of living. A lot of our employees did the same thing. They went back to live with their parents or their family, you know, out in the countryside somewhere in the provinces. And so, yeah, the big advantage there is it saves our employees like an hour or two a day in commute, like because the traffic is so terrible. So it was a huge advantage to them.
I can relate to that. I mean, I come from Asia, Malaysia, so I know how horrible this traffic can be. And yeah, I mean, same thing here in Sydney or Melbourne. Who would want to travel 1 or 1.5 hour each way just to
City?
And the worst is, I think the worst challenges I find is that after you travel all the way to the city, and you're going to sit in front of Zoom to have a
drink. Yeah, for our employees, it is that way because they end up, you know, mostly working with our customers in the United States and stuff. So, yeah, they come in and have, you know, a couple Zoom calls in the morning or whatever. But, yep.
Exactly. I know that the internet access can be challenging in some of those remote islands. Is it not a problem? I know from my experience, it can be a challenge in some of those areas.
You know, in some of the more remote provinces, countryside kind of areas, I'm not sure. They may not have the super best internet. So my wife is from the Philippines, and where her family used to live was out in the countryside, and they got some kind of satellite internet out there. There was like somebody put like some kind of big satellite tower out there in the middle of nowhere. And I think it was still like 5 megabits download or whatever. It was enough for somebody to do their job and have video calls and stuff. But in a lot of the more urban areas in the bigger cities, I think it was a lot different than it was here in the United States, where a lot of us had cable modems and we had DSL and stuff like that. But I think for the most part, they skipped all that. They went straight to fiber. And so a lot of our employees have fiber in their houses here in the United States. I don't have fiber in my house, and I live in like a really nice neighborhood and everything. Nope, don't have fiber. But yeah, in a developing country, a lot of our employees have fiber in their house. So
they
a lot of them have pretty fast internet, actually.
Now, I know it's easy to hire for software engineer in terms of like your C++ or Java. What about hiring the engineer in more of the data, more in BI space, more in advanced analytics space? Is that your common experience as well, that is equally easy to find those engineers in the data space?
So at Full Scale, we don't typically hire people specifically for that. I mean, we're typically building like web applications and hiring people that know a lot of JavaScript or .NET, PHP, you know, Python, different languages, building a lot of those kinds of applications. We don't really hire people that are like specific, like data analytics and stuff. There's definitely people in the Philippines that do that kind of work, but not usually a skill set that we're hiring for directly.
So for people who want to try it out by outsourcing and try to hire in Philippines, they can obviously go through you, or if they want, they want to try it themselves, what are your advice for them to hire engineer?
Yes, I mean, you know, our goal is to find, you know, the best quality talent. We train them, take care of all the HR and all the local laws and all that kind of stuff, and make them available for our clients. And, you know, we charge on average about $5,000 a month for a developer to do that, which is a very, very good rate. You know, we pay our employees very well for their local wages, and are still able to accomplish that. But I mean, there are websites, you know, like Upwork and onlinejobs.ph and all those kinds of places that you can go and find random developers too. But, you know, you may have to sift through 50 of them or 100 of them to find a good one. And then if you want to hire like four or five people and a whole team and all that kind of stuff, it's even harder to basically find a bunch of random contractors and all this kind of junk. So, you know, a lot of times our customers may before have used Upwork or something like that, and like tired of messing with that, and they want to have a more reputable company that can build them a team that they can really count on. And that's where we definitely can help them out.
So what are the typical challenges that you found they have faced going from hiring on Upwork to coming to you, that those challenges are the obstacle that they had faced that make them to decide to say, hey, well, you know what, I'm just going to go with full skill?
Well, so a lot of times they're hiring freelancers or contractors, right? And they have more concerns about things like security and intellectual property and reliability and all those kinds of things, right? Because they're like, oh, I just found this random Jason guy on Upwork and I send him money via PayPal twice a month and he does work for us. But if he disappears, I don't know how the hell we would ever find him, or, you know, we have no idea. It's just this random Jason guy halfway around the world somewhere, right? So that's the difference. Is like, for us, they can work with us and they're our employees. We know them. We have 300 people there and deal with all the HR and laws. We do the background checks. We, you know, health screening and all the employment screening, all the different things we need to do. So, I mean, that's the difference. You go from like this random freelancer that may do a good job, but, you know, a lot of times people have concerns about the security, confidentiality of their data and all these different things. So they want to eventually get to a more secure, you know, stable way of doing things.
You mentioned about the local regulation a couple of times. Can you elaborate that a little bit more for those who are going into this path of hiring engineer in Philippines?
Yeah. Hiring employees in another country, if you're doing it the right way, like actually setting up a company and actually hiring people and dealing with the local labor laws is definitely a interesting thing to go through. And like in the United States, for example, it's really easy to create a company and get like an EIN number. That's our number. And that would take like a day or two to get that from the government. No big deal. When we first created a company in the Philippines, it took like weeks, like months to get just that, like to actually create a company. And so you want to go rent an office? No, you can't do that until you have this number. If you want to do like payroll, right? No, can't do that. Can't create a bank account. Like, just they make it so hard to do everything, like creating things, whatever, in some of these countries. But yeah, dealing with local labor law is interesting, knowing like, you know, how you hire people and fire people and the taxes. And like in the Philippines, for example, people get paid what they call a 13th month, which is like a bonus payment in December. And they do this, I think, in India too, where there's like different weird allowances. Like, you can give them like a rice allowance or travel allowance or internet allowance and different things like that, that are tax-free to them. Some countries have all these like weird things. So it's just interesting learning all that stuff.
So I think the last couple of years, there are a bunch of companies like Deal where they help you to hire remote worker. So how does that whole, what sort of dynamic does it create for your business, or maybe for even Upwork?
Yeah, so there's a few of those. I was actually on a website for them today called, I think it was called Pilot. And those are really cool if you just want to hire, like for us, we're like, oh, we want to hire a salesperson in Australia. We'd love to have a salesperson in Australia. How would we pay them, provide them benefits, all that kind of stuff? As a US company, like I have no idea how we would do that. So I think that's where those services are great, where you could easily hire someone and try and treat them like a regular employee with all the right benefits and all that kind of stuff. Now, obviously, if you were going to hire 300 people, you would probably just set up a company there and do all of it yourself. But there's a lot of people now, they're like, oh, I have one employee in Australia, I have one in Bulgaria, and I have one in South Africa or whatever. So if you're hiring like a very distributed team like that, those kinds of solutions would be great.
Wonderful. What is the best way to reach out to you and learn more about what you guys do?
So FullScale is at fullscale.io. You can also follow me on LinkedIn. Just look for Matt Watson. I post content every day for startup founders, entrepreneurs, CTOs. I also have a blog that's at visionaryCTO.com. And I host a podcast called Startup Hustle about entrepreneurship. So there's a few different ways to track me down.
Love it. These are my final two questions to close the my usual podcast. The first one is, what is your most important first principle?
The most important first principle. You know, I think when it comes to working with other people and having employees and all that kind of stuff, I don't know what the right way to say this, but it's like just doing the right thing, just doing the right thing to take care of people, be it your employees, your customers, kind of going above and beyond for them. And not everybody does that. And I think, you know, those that you work for, you need to take really good care of. Like at FullScale, without our 300 employees, we don't have a company, right? And so we have to take very good care of our employees and our customers, and putting them first is critical.
Great. What is one book that you have read and thought it would have been better for your younger self to have?
You know, I don't read books. I know
a lot of book in the background, is it not?
Yeah, I know everybody on the podcast can see my bookcase here, but I don't read those books. And I don't know, I'm just not a book reader. I've skimmed through.
Anything that you consume information or get inspiration?
You know, I love just using LinkedIn every day and just learning from other people, you know. I do love learning things online. I'm just not a book guy. I just don't like books.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Matt, for coming on to the Analytics Show podcast and learn a few more things about how to hire engineer in overseas.
All right. Thank you so much.
If you enjoyed this conversation, hit that subscribe button so we can meet again. If you don't, I'll be stuck in an infinite loop. So pull that part by clicking the subscribe and help me out. You can further support us by leaving us a kind review from wherever you are listening. At the end of the year, I will choose a reviewer to send a special gift to, and it might just be you. Look forward to seeing you here next week for a new adventure, if I can find my way out of this endless loop. See ya.